One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Today on The Grave Talks, the dangers of being a ghost hunter. A conversation with Peter Dowling. As a young boy, Peter Dowling and some friends decided to play a board game. That game board was titled Ouija. Little did they know it was far from a game. This single experience would be the start of a journey that would lead Peter down a road of ghost hunting and demonic interactions that were far too close for comfort. Today, we discuss the world of demonology and the dangers of being a ghost hunter with Peter Dowling.
Oh, boy. My parents were devout Christians and when I was a little boy. So it was all complete taboo. Little kids in school, we talk about ghosts, scary things, you know, normal things that children usually talk about.
Sure.
And my grandmother, who is a devout Catholic, believed in ghosts, and she told me some ghost stories. And one of her elderly friends, now deceased, told me that Duane Mansion, Duanesburg, New York, is haunted by a lady in white. It's always the lady in white. And I was just fascinated listening to the story, and I couldn't get enough. So back in the days of the 60s and 70s, maybe the early 80s, we had a thing called the Bookmobile, which was a library on wheels. And it used to come up to the library, or the library used to come up to the elementary school, and I'd get on that Bookmobile, and I'd look for any books on ghosts. And unfortunately, back then, being taboo, there was only a few books on it. The Brown Lady on the Stairs in England. I remember seeing that picture, and I was like, wow, I'd love to see a ghost. That's what I always wanted to do.
Yep.
And unfortunately, my first experience, I wanted to be a ghost hunter because I read a lot of Ed and Lorraine books, and I thought it was so cool. It's like this generation now. You know, you watch TV ghost shows and you have so many people say, hey, I'm going to do that. And they go in for their own thrills. And it's nothing what you read, nothing what you watch on TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's for real when you're in it. And my first experience, I was 12 years old and I was naive. Everybody I knew said ghosts don't exist. And I wanted to see one real bad. And unfortunately, my first experience was with a Ouija board. And at first, I have kids come over and play the game. And we try to make contact with a ghost. And we couldn't make sense of the board when we first started playing. But the more times we used it, we were getting more complete sentences. And as we were going along, I had a little boy named Mike. He must have been 9 years old, and Anne, that was about seven. They would play the board, and I would write things down that we got from the board. And unfortunately, we started getting a little boy coming through, so-called little boy, and said that drowned in the stream nearby, things like that. And so I asked the question, show yourself. And it, the entity did. There was no little boy. It came out as a shadow, had the head of like a turtle. It had like a sailor cap, but it was a shadow, and it moved humanoid form. We booked out of that room screaming. And, of course, our parents that were in the kitchen told us to settle down. But I found out later on, I was telling them, hey, look, Ann, Mike, that was the stupidest thing we ever did. And they said, why is that? That was so neat and cool. Because they thought it was neat to be scared. And I said, well, I got to go back in that bedroom and go to sleep for the night. So that was my first experience. And I started believing that something wasn't right. So as the years gone by, I was always had an interest, and I remembered that. And as my life progressed, I'm now 54 years old. As my life progressed, I started more and more experiencing poltergeist activity, renting rooms and homes that were haunted and experiencing things. And my environmental sensitivity took off. I started having these experiences. And then I think back in 1999, 2000, 2001, 2002, I was accepted in Eastern Shore Paranormal Research Society that was run by a metaphysics professor. And I used to carry the equipment and I worked my way up. And one day she asked me to be president. And we disbanded a few times through the years, but I kept going. I kept doing paranormal research. And unfortunately, there was a few times I was just burnt out and with all the experience. And I finally tried to quit being a ghost. It really weighed upon me. It really tired me out. And, you know, we're dealing with things that we don't understand. And it's hard to explain. I wanted out. It was scary. It started to freak me out, started to scare me of the things that I was experiencing. And unfortunately, somebody gets wind that I used to do this, and they were asking for my help, and I couldn't walk away. And one thing led to another. I'm back into it again. And 3 years ago, I just happened to run across the Syracuse Diocese, New York. I went in there for church, and I happened to meet, was lucky and fortunate enough to meet an exorcist. And I was telling him of what I did through the years and situations I was running into in these haunted locations that were quite demonic in nature. And he confirmed me as a demonologist. I didn't want to get in this field. I did not want to cross the line. I knew the dangers of a demonologist. Every bone in my body, I didn't want to do this. But unfortunately, I'm stuck. And I'm back on a daily basis. When you cross that line, your life changes. And it's never the same again.
I want to go back, and you obviously, there's a lot to unpack there, and I want to work through a lot of that. But I want to first go back to when you were talking about your initial experience with a Ouija board as a child. When you had the guts, or I don't know if guts are the right word when you're a kid and you're doing something dumb, when you had something going on, what was going through your mind as this became something more than just the board, when you saw this shadow-like figure that had an odd-shaped head, and it's there, it's in the room, obviously, more than just this was a bad idea. What are you thinking? What's going through your little you's mind?
Well, the first thing that crossed my mind would be a swear word. Oh, you know what?
you can swear on the show.
Out of that room, and I think I wet my pants. But Ann and Mike didn't have to sleep there, and yeah. Then I knew it was something too that wasn't nice. You know. Later on, as I got older, I learned it was one of the tools of the occult, and some people use it. And then, back then, very little was written about it, and it was any books that came out on the supernatural. A lot of publishers wanted to label it fiction, but everyone around me didn't believe such a thing. It's a hush hush, even as an adult, even all the way up to when ghost shows just started coming out. And I have to admit, I will say one thing positive about these ghost shows. The public is more open-minded about it, where in the 70s and the 60s, it was, and that was completely taboo. Oh no, ghosts don't exist. They're all demonic, what have you. Now, I actually was, I didn't think anything of that. It disturbed me. It really did. It wasn't that little boy that drowned in the stream. It was something else. And one thing I do know, and I warn people all the time, do not use Ouija boards. that a lot of times when you use occult tools, and I'll have to say for Wiccans and what have you, and it's not a personal attack, it's positive. A lot of these entities are crafty. They will make you believe that you're talking to a little child or a little boy or to a person to get you close. That's so you would invite it and want to talk to it more, and then you'll become more attached. And once you do that, all right, you have actually inviting it in, and then it becomes an attachment. People think that they have enough knowledge to use occult tools safely, and that's the trick of a lot of these entities. And because their main purpose is possession. The main purpose is destroy. And these entities do exist. And I mean, I've run across them. I can't explain it. I have tons of equipment. I approach it scientifically, but there's a metaphysical side that I can't deny. And when I can't find reasonable explanations for things, I have to conclude it as evidence, you know, and let the viewer decide.
I want to ask you about that, and we don't normally get into equipment talk or anything like this on the show, but I am curious because we're talking about Ouija boards, and you use other equipment too. Define for me other equipment that's used. Are there other pieces of equipment that are used in ghost hunting? I know, like, the average ghost hunter is not necessarily carrying a Ouija board along with them these days, but the thing is, there is modern equipment that I'm wondering, can it be just as dangerous as breaking out the Ouija board in terms of opening a door to something? Are there certain pieces of equipment that really are just the modern version?
Yes. You have the ovulus, different types of ovulus. That is similar. The spirit box, it's a white noise. Spirit box, it sweeps radio frequencies, you know, and you have numbers from all the way to, I believe, 172 to 200 or 250, and it sweeps that per second. Yes, you're absolutely right that a lot of these equipment can be dangerous, and I do use them, but I protect myself before on an investigation through prayer. My assistant also does the same thing. I taught her how to ghost hunt safely, and that's the thing that we need to do. Is you can't just go into these haunted places, investigate, and not protect yourself.
Sure.
And, you know, I pray there's definitely a God. So I pray for a God. I pray to my higher power. And I ask for protection and the angels and what have you before we go in. And I have holy water. We go in and, you know, protect Melody through prayer, and she protects me through prayer, and we go in and we have by our faith in God, because you know, the thing is I as a human being, I am scared when I go to these places. That's a normal emotion, but I go in there because I feel like somebody has to. There's been times I had to go into these haunted locations alone, and I always tell people, don't do it alone.
When you say don't go and investigate a location alone, why is that? Is there danger there? Is it more so because then the evidence, there's not, you know, basically another person to say, yes, this happened? Or where does your reasoning come from that?
It's not only just the proof of evidence that does play a part in it, but it's also metaphysical dangers. You don't know what you're dealing with. I don't know what I'm dealing with when I go on investigation. Mm-hmm. And I go into every investigation as a agnostic. I try to find reasonable explanations first. And I ask a lot of questions before every investigation. Also, there are physical dangers when you do an investigation, especially cemeteries. The older cemeteries, the coffins, you know, they sometimes collapse, and you've got dips, and you have tombstones that might be broken. So it's not wise, because if you trip and fall and your head hits one of the tombstones or the headstones, you could be in serious physical danger, you know, trouble. Sometimes in places there's hidden dangers, you go into an abandoned building, there might be a hole in the floor somewhere, or rotted wood. You could fall and get hurt very badly.
Mm-hmm.
The metaphysical dangers, well, we can talk about possession. We can talk about having these entities follow you home, which has happened to me before. And it can be very unpleasant. So the thing is these entities know you're giving it attention. Okay. And so they're going to try to get your attention a lot of times. And that's what happens for whatever reason.
Let me ask
you
this.
That's what it seems like.
Let me ask you this, because you said that you use some equipment that is very similar to, or not necessarily similar, but could have, you know, similar results as that of a Ouija board. But you do use them, and you use them with protection. Is there, I guess my question would be, what will be holding you back from breaking out a Ouija board at an investigation rather than more some of the modern equipment if you're using protection? Or is there a difference there when it comes to the protection that you can have over yourself with using certain things versus others?
I don't know. The only thing that I am aware of is they can manipulate these devices to communicate. You know, are they really the person I'm talking to? I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I cross the line into demonology, there's no games. I'm aware of what they can do. I also know through the grace of God, there go I, I'm the vessel, that I can confront these things. And, you know, I've had people come to me and ask me, hey, I want to be a demonologist. And I'd look at them and the red flags would come up and I would say, why do you want to be a demonologist? And they would tell me and I would say, well, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
I says, you might think you're called to be a demonologist, but you're not. You have to be confirmed. You have to have people tell you that this is what you've been called to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be a demonologist. I just wanted to be a ghost hunter. But as time progressed, I was running into situations that were demonic. It's rare. It's not a lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I have run across it and I have dealt with them. And these electronics, these devices and what have you, that's the difference. Why I say don't use the Ouija board, but you have people that don't know what they're doing using these equipment, and yeah, it's going to cause more problems in the end than good. And I try to warn people, there's a lot of dangers. You can't just watch it on TV and think you can just go out and ghost hunt.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. And, you know, stay away from these websites that give out degrees in demonology and all this stuff. No, talk to somebody who's done it. I wish these TV shows would at least put a warning out that, you know, of these dangers, and to be trained by somebody who is experienced. You know, I'm not an expert by no means. And I tell people there are no experts in this field.
Yeah.
All right. We only have experience.
Exactly. Now, I completely agree. I completely understand with what you're saying. When we go back to your original experiences as a child, that Shadow Man, did events continue to occur in your house, your childhood home growing up, that were paranormal in nature after that Ouija board incident that continued to pique your curiosity?
Yes, it's tormented me, and it's probably affected my whole life, to be honest with you, Tony. I was having apparitions in my home, things happening. Certain events did take place. I got rid of the Ouija board, but I didn't know what to do, so I put it in a burning barrel and I burned it. And as an adult now, and the experience I have, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to do other things to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
My life took a complete turnaround. It has affected my life to this day. I didn't know what I had done. These things are so nasty. You can go into an environment. There's difference between a pissed off Casper and a demon.
Yeah.
Infested place. You walk in, you can feel it. And not all, you, it's a hatred of a thousand times you feel. Like every part of your being does not want to be there. And there's tricks that we use to know what we're dealing with. If it's an irregular earthbound entity, intelligent earthbound, or residual. And a lot of times I set up religious items all through the house and they do not like it at all, you know, and you always get a reaction because what you're doing in effect, you know, you see on TV, you throw holy water on it and sage and what have you, and they flee. No, they just get pissed off, you know? So that's how I know what I'm dealing with, because also if I see heavy objects thrown, like a refrigerator being knocked over or a table being flipped, heavy objects, then, those are signs of demonic activity. If you see a piece of paper just being thrown or what have you, also the time of the day you can tell as well, at 3 a.m., around 3 a.m., they like that because it's mocking the Holy Trinity. There are a lot of things that we use to identify with what we're dealing with. But you see, when we go on an investigation, you just don't know. And on these, with this equipment and everything else that we use, okay, we know that we're dealing with some entity, something that we're not knowledgeable of what it is when we first go in. And that's the most dangerous part.
Sure. Let me ask you this, because sometimes I know you can go into an investigation and end up discovering there's more than one entity here, and some of the entities may very well be of human nature that were once human people that were walking around the earth. It's Aunt Edna that's haunting the house. And then at the same time, there's also something very dark, something very demonic, something that never did walk the earth that's also tormenting the individuals who are, say, in that house. This is just a theoretical, story. When you have that sort of thing going on, sometimes I've heard stories where you'll hear, well, we believe, you know, Aunt Edna is actually protecting us from the dark entity that's here as well. Is that true? Are they on the same sort of plane, meaning the spirits of the living and the darker demonic type things that may be out there? Are these different entities interacting with one another? Can they sense one another on the other side? Or are they both kind of in their own playing fields, but they just happen to be overlapping geographically?
Well, I kind of agree with Lorraine Warren. She spoke of that often. And I do know for a fact that usually when I do a deliverance inside a home for cleansing, okay, there's more than one entity, always. It seems like they do all work together, and there is a hierarchy, and when you do a cleansing, it's sometimes it can take days. I have to come back and do it again. And then sometimes it can come back and be worse. And I won't get too far off the subject, but I've seen so many paranormal investigators, they do an investigation, they get the evidence, and oh boy, this is the best evidence we ever got, thank you. And they'll take the evidence, put it all over Facebook, put it all over social media, but then leave the people hanging, the clients hanging, and the things get worse.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. You can't leave the clients. You stay with them, and you ask them, you help them. And you do everything possible to resolve the issue. But you'd be amazed. A lot of times I've gone and done an investigation where I have caught evidence, I have photographs of an entity, or I get an EVP, electronic voice phenomenon. And once I tell them that, you know, it's nothing really to be afraid of, that it's a residual or it's intelligent, they say, oh, I'm okay with it. You know, they leave me alone, I'll leave that alone, you know, and you'd be amazed how many people are willing to live with it. But when it comes to the demonic, yes, they work together. Now, do I believe that one is protecting one from the other? Maybe it's an angel, maybe from God. That could be it. But I have also, through my experience, feel that bad people that in life have done bad things, and they were pretty much kidnapped by these dark entities, and they're trapped.
Okay.
And so a lot of times, like Lorraine Warren has spoke about this, that a lot of these demons will hold an entity, hold a spirit from being able to go into the light or go wherever they have to go, where is paradise or wherever they're supposed to go. Guilt can also hold a person, because a lot of these negative entities, that's how they get in. They wait for your weakest moment. It's emotional. They like to hide in the dark, all right? And it's not one of those, the devil made me do it. Well, possibly. I mean, I kind of question myself how many people are in mental institutions that they're actually possessed.
Sure.
It isn't a medical issue.
Yeah.
And these drugs just keep the entity locked in.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to wonder about that. I mean, I certainly there are mental issues, and there are certain, you know, medical things that can go on with the human body. That's without a doubt something that, you know, we know is fact. But you do have to wonder.
It's a fine line.
Yeah, it can be a fine line. You're right. There are many times where, when the person is, in fact, possessed and they're coming out and saying things, the medical community almost all the time will just attribute it to whatever diagnosis that they have. And it's just that. But there's cases where things are coming out of their mouths, and it's not just random, you know, whatever. It's like there is no way they could have knowledge of this or that. Like,
right.
Where is that coming from?
I've experienced that.
Yeah,
I've experienced that before. I became a demonologist, I actually experienced that. Matter of fact, I was in an environment, things were kind of tough for me, and I wound up being for a short while homeless. So I wound up going to a shelter, and there was a homeless man that slept next to me in one of my bad moments in life. And when he was sound asleep, and there was multiple voices coming out of his mouth. And when I was laying there listening to this, I felt like these demons actually knew I was listening. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, oh boy, how do I handle this? And it was a Christian shelter that I stayed overnight in. And the next day, I had to stay there for a couple nights, actually. And the next night, he was gone. So, I wasn't the only one hearing that. And I remember talking to other people that witnessed the whole thing. All right. Now, we know that Buddha monks, our vocal cords, we can, you know, have multiple voices. But usually when the monks are actually making the noise of the humming or the chant, all right, it's usually the same octave, the same sound coming out, but just different octaves, all right? But this is like a conversation going on, like multiple conversations coming out of the mouth at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a witness to this, all right? So my job as a demonologist, if I go into a place and I gather enough evidence, of course, I can't, you know, I'm the type of person of, you know, the sensitives or people who have other gifts, that they can say, well, I sense that there's an entity in here. Well, I won't believe that until I have actual evidence. You know, don't tell me that there's pudding on the table. I want to see the pudding on the table. Because you saying that there's pudding on the table doesn't mean that there's actually pudding on the table.
Yeah.
I want to go in there, and if I got a picture or I see it with my own eyes, then I'll believe.
And don't tell me there's Jell-O on the table, and then I get there, and you've put, like, shredded carrots and all sorts of, you know, green olives and shit into it. Because that ain't Jell-O. I'm telling you, that's not fucking dessert.
You got it. You got it. Unfortunately, I kind of wish the paranormal community worked more together. Like scientists, you can have a disagreement, but you still work together to find answers for things. But unfortunately, I'm seeing too much competition between ghost hunting groups.
Yeah.
It seems like they're all clamoring for fame.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it's supposed to happen. And I have talked to, you know, the psychics or mediums and things like that. And I'll say yes. Like, for instance, my partner has certain gifts. She's an empath, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We'll go into a haunted place, and she says, I feel that there's a woman named Elizabeth. This has actually happened. I feel that I'm feeling an entity, Elizabeth. I don't know why Elizabeth keeps coming to my head. And I'll say, okay, dear. And I'll put it in the back of my head.
Sure.
Right? And she thinks I'm being belligerent. And I'm like, I'm not. I'm actually putting it in the back of my head. And then what I'll do is I'll go through the evidence. And then all of a sudden I'll hear a name. I'll say Ann Durant. I'm just making up a name. Yeah. And so what happens is I'll say Ann Durant. Let's look up Ann Durant in that cemetery, see if that person shows up, a tombstone. There's somebody buried Ann Durant there. And then first thing I know, Ann Elizabeth Durant. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't believe, you know, I don't believe in coincidence. You know?
So. Sure.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta just that information comes out, then let's see if we can confirm it. Let's don't just jump immediately to everything being accurate because we don't know, you know, right away.
Right.
Let me ask you this, and again, I keep going back to the beginning, but I want to move forward here too. I'm the one who's doing it because I'm always curious about it. Because a lot of it stems back. Do you believe that the shadow man who appeared after playing with a Ouija board when you were a child, do you believe that entity was demonic?
Yes.
Okay.
And I didn't hesitate with that answer, as you noticed.
No. I'm going to ask you, of course, the next question. Why? Why do you believe? What other pieces of evidence did you have after that exact moment that leads you now as an adult to look back on that retrospectively and say, yes, I believe that was demonic?
It was deformed from one thing, and the way it came out, because I do know that we run into angels and not even known it, okay? And when these entities come to me, I've lost my dad. My dad has passed away. And when he came to me in my dream to tell me he was okay, all right? It didn't scare me. Mm-hmm. Anything that's from the good, it doesn't scare you. Fear is not from God. All right.
Sure.
And the thing is when it jumped out of the shadow like that, it was deformed. It was large. Mm-hmm. It wanted to scare me. And of course, that's emotion. A fear is an emotion, and that weakens the emotion. Is, you know, you're getting scared and what have you. They like that. They like to torment any certain way. They like to torment. And when you weaken yourself, that can lead to infestation. It can, you know, anything is possible. But for me, it scared the dickens out of me, and it scared Ann and Michael, and it was huge, and it was deformed. It wasn't that 8 or 11-year-old boy that drowned in the stream nearby.
Sure.
That we were in contact with. And that's the whole thing. I tell people, when you are in communication, there are times I've recorded past loved ones, people that I knew, and in the back of my mind, they sound just like them, everything. But there's usually something wrong. There's something wrong. If an entity shows up in front of you, portraying a person or what have you, and you know that person, they don't have it exactly right. And the entities that I've run across, sometimes, yeah, sure, you have that fight or flight kind of emotion when something pops out at you. But a lot of times I've gotten to a point, because you do it for so long, you'll be like, whoa, we got ghostage, you know?
Yeah.
And you get excited. It's not like TV shows where, you know, something slams and you're flying down, you're running and screaming. It's not that. We face it, we don't run, and because we want to know, we want to have answers. I can't get answers if I'm running.
Sure.
You know, and I have run across these entities, and some, yes, very frightening. I have run into a demonic entity, and on Route 20 towards Albany, New York, a long time ago, I had an actual demonic entity go through me. And I remember hearing on one podcast you did, that happened to you, but you were paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And you had this entity go through you. I felt a jerk, a jolt, and it took the wind right out of me. and I froze, and I couldn't believe it, and I ran in fear. So that happened to me, and it's a long story, but that happened to me, and I know what it's like. When these things appear, there's a difference. I can't explain it, but as a ghost, it'll scare you because it's always when you don't expect it. You walk around a corner, there it is, you know? Mm-hmm. But when the demonic, it's worse. Times worse.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Peter Dowling about the dangers of being a ghost hunter. In part two, what happened on Route 20 in New York when Peter came across a demonic entity? When did Peter feel most threatened while investigating the paranormal? What are some cemeteries that are haunted, and why are some cemeteries seemingly not haunted? Has Peter ever come across someone who has made a deal with the demonic to better their life, only to later realize that was a bad idea, and can it be undone? Also, can an entity possess more than one person at a time? We'll discuss all of that in the second half of our interview. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. That's what allows us to be on the air and do this show for you every single week. It's only $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks to sign up to be a Gravekeeper and support our program and get part two of this episode and every episode. Your $5 a month gets you access to hundreds of episodes in their entirety. And like I said, supports our program and keeps us on the air. Or visit thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.